This is Angel Connect, the podcast series, episode number 15, an interview with Barrett Wood. In this episode, Hall Martin from Angel Connect is interviewing Barrett Wood, an angel investor who has experience in several industries, including not only high tech, but also real estate and oil and gas. And so in this case, we'll talk about somebody who started angel investing from a family perspective, from the legal profession, since he was a professional at that time, a lawyer, who had background in research. He then joined his father, and they both became very knowledgeable in investment strategies. So let's listen in as Hall Martin interviews Barrett Wood on Angel Connect. Let's listen in.
Well, hello, this is Hall Martin with the Angel Connect program here with Barrett Wood. Barrett, thank you for joining us today. Can you tell us a little bit more about your investing background and what your group there does?
Certainly. Thank you, Hall. We're a family office, and I use that sort of lightly. Basically, what we are is my dad and I are ex-lawyers that have now been able to focus entirely on our venture capital. And so in that sense, you know, we're a private investment company that just happened to be in the same family. And in terms of my experience, it really, I'm relatively new, I would say. It dates back to me arriving in Austin in 2010 to assist in some investments that my dad had been involved in with other partners. I came on as kind of a general counsel and have since sort of evolved to primarily manage and source all the stuff that we're doing. And in terms of my dad's experience, he was doing angel investing and venture capital in addition to his law practice for several years. And I'm not sure he called it angel investing and venture capital. He was just kind of having fun getting involved in deals. And I think his background as a bankruptcy attorney lent itself to, you know, a certain helpful expertise and creativity that is translated into the stuff that we're doing now. And I try to learn as much as I can from that and then learn from our own experiences. So now we kind of have three main branches that are pretty broad. We do real estate, we do oil and gas, and we do tech. And try not to get too overweighted in one sector because of, you know, so that we don't get burned by a downturn. And that's generally our experience with tech specifically. We had been by 2012, we had been doing primarily real estate and oil and gas. And frankly, occurred to me living in Austin in this environment that we would be remiss if we just ignored all the tech opportunities that were happening around us. And so, frankly, I can remember the moment I sat down with a legal pad at my desk in the house in late 2012, and I wrote down the words, "How do you become a tech investor?" And that was really my first step into angel investing into the tech world. I sent out emails to some local incubators and accelerators, tried to do some research if the legal practice had given me any helpful skill, it was probably research. So I tried to do as much research as I could on local incubators and accelerators and tried to establish some relationships, and that really initiated my angel investing experience. So
how do you find tech investing is alike or different from real estate or oil and gas investing? What do you see as the contrast and comparison there?
Well, the similarities, what I like to think is no matter what industry or what sector you're in, not to sound too oversimplistic or cavalier, but a business is a business, and it still needs to have the right fundamentals. It needs to create revenue, and that revenue needs to exceed everything that, you know, that it costs to produce whatever it's producing. So if I've ever had any difficulty that I've learned from, it's try and overcomplicate things. Not think, well, this is the tech world, I don't know anything about it. I'm going to go ahead and have to trust the much smarter folks that suggest that I ought to think differently about this. Now, that said, you mentioned the contrast. There are realities in the tech world. There are the realities that valuations of companies can be derived from, you know, thin air and can be much higher than anything that could, anything tangible, anything objective that you're used to in, you know, in a business model. So across the board, I'd say a business is a business. And I've heard it over and over again, you're never going to go broke making a profit. And that needs to kind of stay in the back of your mind if you're evaluating any business. But the unique aspect of the tech world is sometimes a company can be worth a whole lot, even if they don't make a whole lot. And I'm still trying to get used to that concept. So,
and so when you start to look at these tech companies, what are you looking for, given that, you know, it's got, you know, these very unusual metrics for valuation? Whenever I explain it to people, they're always aghast that we do that. But, you know, in the early stages, there's not a lot of traditional values there, like cash flow, book value, and so forth. So you have to come up with other ways of doing it in order just to keep things reasonably fair with the entrepreneur and the investor and so forth. But how do you evaluate then a tech deal that you might want to go after, given it's got that early stage effect on it?
The people, and that's been, you know, we've had a lot of learning experiences. We've had a lot of trial by fire, but even notwithstanding our experiences so far, our fundamental has remained the same with tech, and that's the people. We evaluate that, I think, more than any deck or any spreadsheet that we see. We make sure that we meet with the people face to face, and just kind of do our best to judge. You know, competency is key, but also really, integrity. That's to the extent that you can judge that in a short window, and kind of fortitude, frankly, whether or not the principals seem like they would be able to withstand one or two failures at least, because that's going to happen with any startup. So in terms of that evaluation, it's people. And then if there's a comfort level there, we think that the principals, you know, the founders and maybe even the first employees are ready to endure what is inevitably coming. Then we look at the business model and go through the same thought process I alluded to a minute ago, which is this a real business? Is this, you know, hopefully they're not relying on the one in a million, instead relying on something that can be scalable, something that, you know, is tangible and objective. You've got, this is where the money's going to come from, and this is how we're going to grow, and we're going to do it responsibly. It took me hearing several times from prospective, you know, pitches that their exit strategy was to get acquired by Google before I developed some level of skepticism and cynicism. And so when we evaluate, we're just much more realistic. It's people first, and then let's have a realistic discussion about whether or not this is a business that can grow and be successful.
And so what do you end up spending your time doing with these startups? Of course, once you figure out they've got a business model, it's going to go someplace, it's interesting and so forth, how do you spend your time with those companies? What do you end up doing most to keep them on track?
It's varied. Our level of participation is varied. Sometimes we kind of just throw in with another lead or somebody that has just organized the investment and said, just, you know, effectively keep us posted. But if we put, you know, if we're the lead or frankly the de facto lead, just because we put in more than everybody else, then there's naturally an increased responsibility there, and we're much more vested. And so we stay on top of it. You know, I make sure there's regular communication. I make sure there's regular updates. But more than anything, I've tried to let our investment principals know that we're here for them. And if there's anything that we have are and any resources we have that can assist, if there's any introductions we can make, if there's any time that we can dedicate to helping the business out, and we've got a couple employees here within our organization that we can put to use if if it would help the investments that we're in. So with regard to really any of our investments, I don't like to just sort of write a check and then hope. I like to think that we're much more active after the fact.
That makes sense. So how do you find the dynamic of leading a deal versus not leading the deal? In which cases do you say, hey, I want to lead this deal? In other cases, I say, I probably don't want to lead it. What's your criteria there for that?
Our general approach is not to lead. We'd like to have more irons in the fire. And that kind of goes to our preference towards diversifying, particularly, on the tech stuff, because I think that's a critical element. You've got to diversify. So given that we're a small shop and we're using primarily our own capital, we don't really like to lead, but sometimes that just ends up being the case. That's happened a couple times where we were thinking we were just going to be throwing in, and we ended up kind of the de facto lead just through a series of circumstances. And so when that happens, you just kind of take the hand that you've been dealt and you say, okay, well, let's all hunker down and make this thing work. But generally, we don't like to lead. I have other folks that, more appropriate, more applicable resources help the investment, and we'll piggyback on that.
Right. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense as well. And so in the tech world, there's quite a few segments out there. What do you find today that's pretty interesting to invest in?
Well, I just got back from Baltimore last week, and we were looking at some healthcare startups. All of the regulation in there creates opportunity, and it also creates barriers to entry, which creates an interesting environment. In that area, we would certainly have to defer to our formula, so to speak, of relying on the expertise of the principals, because I couldn't begin to tell you what to know in the medical arena. Healthcare is interesting. The enterprise world in general, I know that's a very broad category, but consumer tech software is always garners a whole lot of attention and a lot of headlines and a lot of really big numbers. I'm more attracted to enterprise opportunities. I think, not to sound like a broken record, but it's easier to wrap my head around. It's within the context of a business. I think that's kind of off the top of my head, that's what we're looking at. And generally, we are we're offsetting a lot of our seed level investments with stuff that's later down the pipeline, so to speak. We've done recently some later stage investments, Series C, Series D's, to kind of offset some of those longer fuses that we have on the seed level.
Is there a 1-to-1 match between every seed stage deal? You have to have an offsetting later stage deal, or how do you balance that?
I wish we were that systematic and that organized. But a lot of times because it's our own capital, we are only as available and only as liquid as our last exit. So sometimes we just don't have the luxury of that timing or capacity. So no, I mean, we do our best to just be diversified, not just across sectors, but also within each sector, but we don't have a hard formula. Frankly, if I tried to stick to a hardline formula, I think it would be to the detriment of some opportunities. So we try to keep an open mind and, invest as the opportunities avail themselves.
I see. Well, very good. Well, that answers my questions. I always want to thank you for coming on and sharing your information with other investors. We get a lot of new investors into the startup world from oil and gas and real estate, and I think you made a nice transition from one to the other using one skill with the other skill. So glad to see that's working well for you, and want to thank you for taking time for us.
Thank you, Hall. I appreciate the opportunity. This is fun.
All right. Thanks.